They're all little pieces. So it's, we'll try to see how far we get. So it says, Eladram she'en lehem shiur. The following mitzvahs, following precepts, have no limit. Now, mi d'oraisa, they were given without defined boundaries. Most mitzvahs do have defined boundaries. These have no maximum and no minimum. And so the question is, what does this mean also on a deeper level? At first we go through some of them, and then we get into more of what does this mean or why, that they have no limit. Again, there's obviously a lot of reasons. I just picked a few. But the first that's given to is the payah, which is the corner of a field that has to be left to the poor. And it says, it comes from Vayikra. It talks about the fact that lo techala peyat sadech lekatzer la'ani ulager tazovata. What's a proselyte, by the way?
Proselyte is a
convert. It's a convert? Okay. It says, don't complete your reaping to the corner of your field. To the poor and to the convert, leave for them. So the payah is the corner of each field that a landowner has. Now the halacha is that he has to leave a corner or part of the field for the poor. That's the bottom line halacha. And the what it means is that the farmer is actually an automatic partnership with the poor man. In other words, it's not like the poor is being given a gift. This is his rightful share. This was determined by the Kadosh Baruch Hu in Eretz Yisrael, that the poor gets a portion of the field. It's an automatic right. It's not a gift to the poor. It's like a partnership, as if there are two people that own the field, and you have to divide it up however the partnership was arranged. 50-50, 20-80, 10-90, whatever it is. That's the partnership. And that's what the Kadosh Baruch Hu made. Anybody who owns land in Eretz Yisrael, that's the requirement. And obviously, all of us really do own land. We just don't know where it is right now. And it's not a gift from the farmer. He's not giving it to the poor person, anything. It belongs to the poor from the beginning, like a contractual partnership. Now, mi d'oraisa, there's no maximum or no minimum limit. In other words, the farmer could take one stalk for himself from the field and leave the entire rest. You could define the corners as being everything except that one stalk in the middle, let's say, and the entire rest is for the poor. The boundaries, or he could take the entire field for himself except one stalk in the corner. It could be that way as well. Okay, those are the degrees. Now, the rabbis later on, Chachamim decided that they had to establish a minimum shiur because things were not being apportioned properly. This is one of the only places in this list that actually there is such a limitation. Now, 1/60th of each field must be left as payah. But that was instituted much later. But the real contractual agreement is that that is the poor's portion in the land. Okay? The next one is bikurim. And this is the carbon of the of bringing the first fruits. So the halacha is in Eretz Yisrael, the first produce of your field, of the shiva meaning, which are the seven species, must be brought to the kohanim, the Beit HaMikdash. And again, there was no maximum and no minimum on your first fruits and which fruits you brought in terms of size, beauty, whatever. There was no minimum. And it's never been imposed by anyone that it should be changed in any way. No maximum, no minimum limits. Now, just a side note, just wanted to just bring this up as a side note, is that when the farmer presents his basket of bikurim, regardless of its simplicity, regardless of its extravagance, he makes a statement in front of the Mizbeach when he arrives in the Yerushalayim and in front of the Beit HaMikdash, and he's in front of the Mizbeach. And Devarim, he says, Higadati hayom la'Hashem elokecha, ki bati el ha'aret asher nishva lavotenu lateit lanu. I declare today to Hashem, your God, that I have come to the land that Hashem swore to our forefathers to give us. So what is the Rav Schwab asks on this? What do you mean, I have come to the land that Hashem swore to our forefathers to give us? He's been living in the land, right, all this time. He's been living with, on his property in whatever area of Eretz Yisrael. So what does this mean? I've come to the land. So he says, Rav Schwab says that he's saying to the Kohen, Today I arrived at Eretz Yisrael. The farmer said that the real Eretz Yisrael is the place of the Shekhinah, here at the Beit HaMikdash. The rest is peripheral. It also has the Shekhinah in it, but the real place of the Shekhinah is here at the Beit HaMikdash. And he's making this, he's declaring the statement, my land is in peripheral parts of the country, but Eretz Yisrael, the real Eretz Yisrael, the pure Eretz Yisrael, is right here in the Beit HaMikdash. Right here at this point. Now just saying, we're beginning the 9 days, and you can really think about this as added to our law. Here we, you know, here we are spread out through the lands of Eretz Yisrael. But the main thing we don't have is the Beit HaMikdash. And the property, the land of the Beit HaMikdash, is not in our, we can't even go there, because there's nothing, we can't do anything with it. And that, Rav Shabbat was saying, is like, that's the real Eretz Yisrael. That's where it all stems from. That's where it all comes from. And that's the piece that we don't even have. Even the farmer who plows his field and, you know, and is nourishing his land and reaping his produce, he cannot, even that is not the real Eretz Yisrael. It all really comes out of the base, land of where the Beit HaMikdash is. And the next thing it says is the Harayon. That's the, what do you call that? The pilgrimage? That's the, what's the word? Aliyah Regel. That you go to Beit HaMikdash, Shlosh Regalim, Pesach, Shavuot, and Sukkot. That's the other, that's another piece that has no, there's no limit. That means, when there's no limit, it means that you can go, bring, you know, you're coming to the Beit HaMikdash to be seen. In other words, you're coming to be seen. By who? By Kadosh Baruch Hu. Okay, really, ultimately by Kadosh Baruch Hu. You're also coming to be seen by all the nations of the world. Everybody's making this Aliyah LeRegel to the Beit HaMikdash, showing this incredible force pulling us towards the center of the world, and also showing other Yidden. But the idea really is that you're coming to be seen to be seen. So that coming to be seen can be a second, okay, in terms of no shiur. It can be a second, or it can be a whole day that you're standing there, or days, whatever the situation is. But that's your decision to make. There's no limit, there's no impose how much you can appear to be there and to be seen by a Kadosh Baruch Hu. And this again, I think this relates to our, like, you know, being in the moment, being in the presence of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. You know, in each person, you could take that on a simpler level back to your own life and your own moment. Besides the Shlosh Regalim, how much time do you spend being seen by a Kadosh Baruch Hu, or seeing a Kadosh Baruch Hu? Being it, right? He's seeing it, but he would like us to turn around and look at him while he's looking at us. And oftentimes we're, you know, doing his mitzvah, but he's like waiting to have a conversation with us, like the, you know, like you hear about Lavdil, you know, the father who's out, you know, making a living for my child, and I'm working day and night, you know, and the child never sees him. The child doesn't want that big fancy whatever. The child would rather have. Doesn't even realize what typically children don't even get, poor or rich. You know, if they have that love of the parent, that attention, that focus from the parent, then they're happy. They don't need that extra stuff. So it's the same way, I think, from the Kadosh Baruch Hu. You know, we're running after his doing all this stuff, but, you know, but do we turn around and give him any attention? You know, are we letting him give us attention? So here, there's no limit. It's up to the person to decide what's the appropriate amount for that. People have responsibilities, right? If somebody comes to Dilly Rug and they could have 10 kids waiting back in, you know, Beit Lechem or whatever, right? It'll be ours. So, you know, they might not be able to stay for more than 10 minutes, a half an hour. You know, there's all sorts of, this is where HaKadosh Baruch Hu made a person be their own inner judge. And then the next one is Gemilah. Do you want to say something? Go ahead.
Maybe that's part of the Tzad Shina.
Sometimes we impose mitzvahs for Kadosh Baruch Hu, you know, in place of, instead of it being one and the same. You know, it's a, like you said, a reflection. They could be one and the same, or not, depending on what attitude and what kavana you're doing something with. Right, right, if you really are. And if it's the right mitzvah for you at the right time. Then it says Gemilas Chasadim. This is not tzedakah, by the way. In the, if you look in the, if you look inside, it's Gemilas Chasadim is not tzedakah. It's anything shebegufo, personal help, favors, kindnesses, anything for another person to make their life better, easier, happier, get them out of a difficulty, out of a problem, or just to raise their morale, their physical needs, anything like that. These are chassadim. It could be a nice greeting to somebody in the street. It could be helping an ill person. It could be helping find shidduchim. It could be anything like that. And again, if there's no limit. And then the last piece is Talmud Torah. And actually these last, we'll end in Talmud Torah, which is, as we know, relates to that second bracha of Birkat HaTorah, which says, Melame Torah La'amo Yisrael. So this ends with Talmud Torah. And the idea of Talmud Torah is not just really the learning Torah, but it's teaching over Torah. The Mishnah ends with Talmud Torah. There's no limit from teaching a child one letter of the Aleph Beis all the way to learning, teaching Torah at the Magid Shir and Yeshiva. That there's no limit, it just says Talmud Torah. And there's no limit to how much it can be in the world. So those are the pieces that have no shiur, that have no limitations that they brought down. So the question is, no limit. We automatically think the more the better. Right? It's like in our brain, because we're living in a life of quantity these days and less quality. You know, everything's like more and more and more. You buy clothes that don't last, right? You know, it used to be you bought something and it lasted many, many years, or you made it last many years, or it was higher quality. We're like in this buying, you know, cheaper, whatever, more, quantity, everything. Everything's quantity. And it's not necessarily true. Hashem left for us in life to create a balance in life. He didn't create life so that people sometimes look at Yidden and they say, oh, you know, they have such a strict life. Because there's so much variety in terms of how much you can choose and what to choose and how much to do and what not to do. But we get caught up in what the Olam does instead of what's really maybe necessary for our own personal life, our children, our husband, our families. You know, there's like this idea, Kodesh Baruch is trying to let us know that you have to make balances and decisions. How much? You know, you might need guidance from a Rav, from a Gadol, from somebody. You know, a good friend. Kneilah HaChaver. That Kneilah HaChaver is crucial. You know? And they say today, Kneilah HaChaver means, you know, buy. Could be, you know, you're paying a therapist. Whatever. It doesn't matter. But, you know, you need someone who's going to be in your life, maybe, and help you know what's good limit and what's not, and are you over. It's very easy for us to be thinking, I have to do this thing. And you get caught up, and I have to get this thing. And it could be really bad for your life, for your children, for your husband, it might not be the way to go. But that person has to know you well enough. For example, the farmer has responsibility. He's going to have to feed and take care of Mefarnes, his family, his workers, maybe his relatives, and he has other stuff obligations. So it's a really great idea. Give huge pay, you know, make it huge. But that may not be appropriate for him to leave huge corners of his fields when he might not be the most successful farmer, or he might have huge obligations in other areas. And there is other tzedakah obligations that everybody has. So you have to know, he has to determine the amount of income he needs. He has to really think about how much payah to leave. It's not like a simple, I'm just going to leave a lot. You know, he has to really think about it in the balance. But on the other hand, he could be a very stingy person who needs to think the other way and get guidance and leaving more payah. But that's, you know, within a person to really think about. Gimlos chassadim. That's the same balance of personal responsibilities and, for example, going out of your house. You know, sometimes you get caught up in doing a mitzvah out of the house when really, like you said, that's like your son may need, you know, a half an hour of your focused attention, which is sometimes very difficult, very draining, but very necessary. And in the meantime, you can't cross off your list some other thing that you were going to do. You know, and it's like letting go and determining what, and that's, you know, the greatest gimlos chassadim, what you do for your own family, for your husband. Does anybody stop and, like, you know, have that half hour, 20 minutes alone with their husband, talking to them, you know, building that part of their relationship that, you know, we're running and running. There's so much to do, and it's so crazy in the world, and it is. But, you know, to take something off that list, to spend that time with the person that you're going to live with, the Rosh Hashanah 120, you know, is it part of your world? And sometimes people have a special ability, for example. Someone I know had a special ability to help kids that are off the derech. and they just really threw themselves into it, and they're first very successful. But now they've gotten so caught up with what they were doing that their own children suffered. Okay, so it's really seeing what you're called for outside, what you're called for inside, and what you're called for inside your own, like we said, taking those moments inside your own self. So this need for balance takes, I think, real courage, incredible courage, incredible thinking, consultation, and inner honesty. There's a story of a woman who she was very, very, she loved Torah so much, and she believed so much in her husband learning. And they got married, and they had children right away, a lot of children right away. And she, when they started out, she cleaned houses. They were living in Eretz Yisrael, and that was the income that she could make. So she was cleaning houses, taking care of her family, and her husband was learning day and night. And at a certain point, his Rosh Hashiva said, you have to stop. He went to his wife and he said, I think I should stop learning now or take a part-time job. You know, it's getting too much. And she said, absolutely not. She had such in her mind that he had to just keep learning. And so he was learning a full day again and went on for another year or two. And she became run down, very ill, but she kept on doing this. And the Rosh Hashiva came to him and said, you know, it's time for you to stop and go out and earn a panasa, even if it's part-time, because your wife can't keep going like this. Your children are suffering. The house is suffering. She could not take this answer. Even though it was from Rosh Hashiva, she had so built into her head that if your husband isn't learning Torah for a time, then you're nothing. Her identity was so caught up. This is a true story. It was so caught up in this idea of Talmud Torah, of Limud Torah, she couldn't let go that it was actually bad for her and her family. It was actually hurting the family, and the Rosh Hashiva was telling her so. It took her another year or so until finally the Rosh Hashiva said, you cannot learn here anymore. I will not have you here anymore until, you know, because this is so bad for your family and for, you know, your wife's physical and mental health, and she doesn't realize it. At that point, she was able to makabel it, and they changed their lifestyle. Exactly how, I'm not sure, but they changed things around. But it was that, a Rav told me the story, who was very involved with the husband. And they said that's how our person has to realize what their limits are and what Hashem gave us. There's no limit to Talmud Torah. Doesn't mean you just do it, you know, it means that you create the right balance in your life that makes a healthy life. Kadosh Baruch Hu does not want unhealthy people, emotionally, physically, whatever, killing themselves. You know, that's not what his plan is. It's being b'sameach and having Kadosh Baruch Hu with simcha and with the right balance of life. So I think that's the message of the limit is no limit means we basically have to learn how to create that, what the right balance is for us, what the right limits are for us. Hmm? You can turn anything around. Yeah, there you go, it's great.
There's a woman who told me she went every day to the Kosovo, and when her daughter got married, she had son, she had to go to Shabbat Brachos for Shabbos. She didn't want to go because she didn't want to miss the Kosovo. And I was thinking, you know, she got addicted to it. And even Ruchnius and even Zveikus, the person has to, like, you know, it might be like her title for Ruchnius, but it might not be the Ratzon of Hashem.
Right. There are lots of taivas that might not be Rosh Hashanah that we think are, or disguised as. That's
even
kind of
nice.
What? I didn't hear what you said.
The whole story afterwards, she went back. She came here some one day, she met somebody from Pittsburgh. She started talking to me. She said, no, you have to dive in for me. I have to go to Pittsburgh. Since I understood, you really get it. Mm-hmm.
Good England. Russ Fisher's house. I was asking a question. And you know, when you go to his house, his wife's on the two phones. His wife, you know, used to be. It was incredible. Was on two phones. Russ Fisher, he was, you know, talking to you and telling his wife the answers on the phone. So someone called and said, you know, she wasn't married. She'd been to the hotel twice for 40 days. Should she go again? No, it's enough already. Okay. Okay, so it's a little bit more. We're going to the next. Okay, so this is Eldrim Shadam Ochel Prisehem Ba'olam Hazeh Be'Karen Kamet Lola Olam Haba. Fascinating. These are the precepts, mitzvot, whose fruits a person enjoys in this world, but whose principle remains for the next world. Now, before we go into explaining what this is, the truth is, this is we said we had Mikra, Mishnah, Gemara, the three, to say after Birkas HaTorah. Now, the Gemara, it's actually this really a Braisa, which is a Tanaic source not put into the Mishnah. But there are, which were a lot, but there are similar like this that were quoted in the Gemara. So Rav Shah brings down that this exact wording, and there are many sources that say, is not actually in the Talmud Bavli, but it must be incredibly ancient. They call it Nusach Yashan, because it's universally accepted in every Siddur as being the Gemara to be used for the Mishnah Mikra Gemara. And even though it's not found in the Talmud Bavli at all, it was chosen to be used as the Gemara. Okay? So there are many, many similar type rices that are in the Gemara. Okay, for example, in Kedushin, it says under the name of Rav Yaakov, Char Mitzvah Behei Alma Lika. I pronounce this right. Reward for a mitzvah does not exist in this world. And that's the whole idea, that a mitzvah is Kula Ruchnias. There's nothing about it that can be actually translated into Gashmian. It's infinite. It goes up into the infinite world. It's completely spiritual, and can only therefore be rewarded spiritually. So how can there be any reward in this world? It says these are the fruits that a person enjoys in this world, but its principle remains intact for the next world. The only reward we can really get spiritually is an Olam Haba. Anything you get here, Olam Hazeh, is not really spiritual. Okay, because we're physical beings. So we can't really, it's very hard to receive on a spiritual level. Physical reward, health, wealth, children, etc., they're not adequate payment for any mitzvah that you do. Nothing is adequate payment for mitzvahs that you do. Yet, or for example, the reward for putting up a mezuzah, okay, or going to the mikveh, can only be given spiritually in Olam Haba. And yet somehow, these 10 mitzvahs, a person in this world receives some type of spiritual fruit. But your main principle is up there in Olam Haba, not being touched. Growing, actually, okay? It's actually growing. We said before, like in the second, in the bracha of Tichias HaMeisim in the Shemona Esrei, Hashem is trying to give us every possible chance to grow those mitzvahs as much as possible. It says, Matzmiach Yeshua. So that why use Matzmiach, this flourishing? We talk about this all the time. This flourishing is that he's going to count first when you pass on, and second when Tichias HaMeisim comes. So that all those years, those mitzvahs could flourish in ways it could never have done without years and years of being taken into account, being utilized. Somebody gives money to yeshiva, how many boys learn and how many boys' sons learn. And you know, you gave a smile to someone and it changed his life and he changed how he treated his children. You gave a piece of advice to someone and you don't know what over the years things could change. Or, you know, Rav Shach, the woman, the story of Rav Shach, this woman, it was freezing cold and he went to, I don't know which yeshiva he was in Europe at that time, but he was freezing cold and he was sleeping on a bench and he was offered to go to an uncle, I believe, or a cousin and start working. And I hope I tell the story right. And he, at first he said no, he procrastinated that and he kept learning and learning. The time passed and again the uncle or the cousin offered him this job. And it got to the point where he couldn't take it, and he said, okay, I'm gonna take it, I'm gonna go to go work, learn a parnasa. And this woman suddenly comes to the yeshiva, and she had all these blankets, and she gave them out. Her husband had died, and he had been in the textile or whatever blanket business. She said, nothing I can do with these, I want to bring them to the yeshiva. So he got this really nice blanket, which he wrapped around himself and slept on the bench, and at least he could now sleep warmly and more comfortably on the bench. He said, you know what, because of this, I can stay longer in the yeshiva. And he passed that difficult period of that decision, and so we had Baruch Hashem Rav Shach. So it was later on, this woman passed away. She had lived near Haifa, and he had gone to the Halavaya in the rain, in the point, and he stood out, and just, you know, he just stood there, and he, I guess it was Mitzpala for her, and then his son or nephew, somebody asked him why, you know, what's so great, and then he said he gave over what she had done. And here, you know, here, her blanket, and what she gave to the world, she gave to the world through her blanket. Yeah. Through her blanket. So you don't know what a Kadosh Baruch Hu is really giving us in terms of, you know, just trying to get us, you know, what do we do to make it the best possible flourishing of our mitzvahs, of our avoda, so that later on we get the best possible olam haba. Okay, so now it's saying, though, that these dividends, which don't touch your spiritual principle, don't have to worry about it, okay? You get somehow, the fruit grows and blossoms here, and they're gifts to be utilized here. There is some type of spiritual receiving that we receive down here. So I just want to go through like three ways to look at it. One is and they're all interrelated. What Rav Schwab Sweat said is that these fruits is like a miniature aspect of something ruchnius that we get down here. Like a miniature, what are those miniature apples? What are those Chinese?
Crab apples?
Crab apples, okay, from the big apple. I mean, lahavdil, but a gift that on some small level has a piece of ruchnius in it, but it's not gashmius, but somehow we can receive it down here. And somehow we get the benefit of it down here. That's what he says specifically. A second aspect that happens from these 10 that we're going to see is they create an inner development in the human being. Certain mitzvahs cause the person develop their inner essence, their inner core, their inner, if you will, personality, whatever. And they become more, they emulate a Kadosh Baruch Hu more through those mitzvahs. And the fact is that the fruit in this world is then the result is that they're being raised to a higher level human being. Your humanness and your godliness, if you will, is being raised, is going up. And we'll go through these mitzvahs. You become less this worldly, olam hazeh, and you become more next worldly in how you have developed as a human being, which is really our goal completely. But somehow, Kadosh Baruch Hu, through these mitzvahs, the fruit is, he pushes you up. Okay? He pushes you up. Some people can work on a midah or on a attitude or whatever. They don't get anywhere. Right? And sometimes you get like a jump up. Right? So that's, this greater spiritual development is manifested within the person. Okay? And when we go through mitzvahs, we'll see it in more detail what it means. So I'll wait for this truck to go by. Do you want more water? People in the other room, there's more water. Bottles of water. Just close the door after you. Sorry. Okay. The third aspect of what it means, kutehem, are opportunities. Sometimes the fruit is an opportunity for more spiritual accomplishment. Hashem will create for you new opportunities for you to do more spiritual things. And that itself, either growth, other mitzvahs, gimelos hasadim, whatever it is, it's a word that enables you to potentially increase your principle for olam haba. Okay? And like many people reinvest their dividends. No, I don't. Oh, yeah, maybe. Thank you. Like many people reinvest their dividends, right, in order to increase their principle. It's the same idea. The dividends you're getting down here, like fruits, are enabled for you to have more opportunities, which will increase your principal, your main treasure, up in Olam Haba. And in many ways, these fruits enable us, they're like rewards that enable us to keep climbing spiritually also and not get weighed down by Olam Haza, not forget what we're trying to do. And when, like little gifts to keep us on the right track. And truth is, any mitzvah could be all three together. Okay, we'll go through and we'll explain what that means. They never clean like this. They never clean like this. What? Maybe. He's gonna go one more. How is it? Do you see him out there? Okay, we'll try in between us. The first mitzvah that it says is kibud av v'em. Now this, everybody says, is one of the most difficult mitzvahs to do. And Rabbi Abaye, whose father died before he was born, his mother died in birth, so he didn't have to be mekayim in the mitzvah, he said that he considers himself very lucky that he didn't violate this mitzvah. But that's how difficult it is.
He also didn't
have that. That's true. He didn't have the opportunity. They said it's so difficult that he felt himself lucky. Sorry. So, but if one does fulfill this mitzvah, it's promised, Yarichun Yamim Ulaman Yitzavlach, your days will be lengthened and it will be good for you. There's two things here. Your days will be lengthened and it will be good for you. Okay, so what does this mean, right? And we said, you know, life on this earth is still... You know, what does that mean? How can there be a spiritual reward here? So the idea of longer life, on one hand, could be if someone can do such an incredible mitzvah, which is so hard, kibud av v'em, it means they have a certain incredible ability to do mitzvahs, to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to respect and do the avodah of kibud av v'em. So therefore, they merit more time because they have this ability to really do mitzvahs well. Okay? Now, as opposed to someone else, most of us, you know, more days are more averos, okay? But with someone who does this mitzvah, which is very difficult, they could merit more days because they could do more with them. So, it's not a gashmias gift of more days, it's an opportunity of ruchnias more days. And also, it says, really, your days will be lengthened. So you can look at it as that actually each day is longer. In other words, each day HaKadosh Baruch Hu will create more opportunities for that person for more ruchnius accomplishment. So the actual day gets filled up more. It's not that you get more days at the self, you know, added another couple of years onto your life, whatever. But each day has greater opportunities for mitzvahs. And then Rav Schwab says that if you look at it says, Olam Shekulo Tov, a person who merits the fruit of Kibud Av V'Em is rewarded spiritually in this world, this is beautiful, with a miniature aspect of Olam Shekulo Tov, a world that all is good. In other words, he gets a hint that all is well with him. Somehow this mitzvah, Kibud Av V'Em, HaKadosh Baruch Hu brings down to him a feeling that all is well, all is right, which is a feeling from a piece of Olam Haba. It's Olam Haba, we know, when you get there, we'll see everything was right. There was nothing wrong in this world. There was nothing wrong to what was happening down here. It's our perception, which, you know, that's our perception. We're human. So you get a piece of that perception in this world. And that enables a person to be Sameach Bechelko, because they feel that this is right, everything is right. And he said it's this incredible desire to do will of Hashem, which through this very difficult mitzvah, that then enables them to receive, you know, this very difficult work of Kibud Av V'Em, it's right. This is my avodah. This is what I'm supposed to do. And then he's happy with his lot. And then that can lead to, according to Rav Schwab, is sameach yisurin. But he can take on yisurin in a little bit happier way, because that also is right. If disaster and misfortune happens, he accepts it a little more easily, a little more happily. And this perus gives the feeling that he's already in olam shekulo tov. It's like a miniature tiny piece of that feeling. If you want to read more on this, he has a book called Ma'ayin Beis HaShoeva that goes into much more detail on what it is. Ma'ayin Beis HaShoeva. I tried to find out exactly what it is or where it is. I don't know yet, okay? Rav Schwab. Is that from him, Ma'ayin Beis HaShoeva? I think it is, but I have to find out, okay? He quotes it many times. But he goes into much more detail. This is just like a piece here. So I'll do one more, okay, and then I guess we'll stop. But unless you want to stop now? Okay, I'll do one more. So the next thing it says in terms of Prusehem is the Milas Chasadim, acts of loving kindness. All this is under Bahafta L'Recha Kamocha from Vayikra, that you should love your fellow man as yourself. In other words, to love, to take care of, to look out for another as for yourself. So what is this mitzvah? It's really by taking care of others, really, really understanding another's needs, problems, strengths, desires, weaknesses, yearnings. You become a person who is able to do greater and greater levels of chesed and love. By really understanding another, you can then meet their need on a higher and higher level. But it takes, you know, you start out doing mitzvahs for other people, the most chesedim. And at first, you can do what you think the other person needs. Or you just randomly do the mitzvah. And slowly, over time, as you really work on understanding what another person needs, your level of sensitivity, your level of compassion, your level of understanding grows and grows and grows. And Rav Schwab said that chesed really means love of others. And if one loves the creatures of the Kadosh Baruch Hu, his reward in this world, the schar, not the principle, the schar in this world, is that he develops ahavas the Kadosh Baruch Hu, because he sees that person, as we talked about in the whole beginnings of the Elokai Neshama and all of that, that a person is a part of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. As we know, they are totally attached to every single one of us. Is totally attached to Kadosh Baruch Hu. And by understanding that every creature, every being of Hashem, and we're talking about from animals, plants, all the way up to people, and then Yidden, is somehow attached to Kadosh Baruch Hu. And of course, Yidden have the most direct connection. Kadosh Baruch Hu blew into us. Kadosh Baruch Hu is within that person. By understanding and loving another human being, you begin to appreciate that Kadosh Baruch Hu. It brings Ahavat the Kadosh Baruch Hu, love of Hashem. It says that that's why Avraham Avinu was merited to be called Avraham Ohavi. In Yeshayahu it says Avraham Ohavi. One, Hashem called him this. Hashem said, one who loves me. Okay, an incredible thing. You know, here we've said Hashem's waiting, you know, for us to just look at him. And here's Avraham, who Hashem called, one who loves me. And he became, obviously, Avraham Avinu, our father, the father of the Jewish people. He merited to start the Jewish people and to bring the world back into its tikkun. And this comes from one who loves me. And how? Because what did Avraham Avinu do?
Chesed.
Right? Chesed. And what did he do? He looked at the world and he saw Kadosh Baruch Hu and everything in the world. And he went out and did chesed and chesed and chesed and chesed. And he was expressing his love of Ahavas Habriyos, this love of creation, which led him to Ahavas Hashem. Okay, he did it, and obviously there weren't Jews to do it to. He was doing it over there to non-Jews. Okay, well, you have to decide what you're going to do with your time, but just saying that there is also just this seeing in other people that they are human, that they are that they have a Kadosh Baruch Hu in them, and that sensitivity brings a love when you do for another person, as Rev Dessler always talks about, that by doing for another you come to love them greater. But really that love of them greater should then bring you also to recognize the Kadosh Baruch Hu and love of Hashem. Wait, I can't hear you. What?
happened to be over at nearly ruined because, and it seems like my friend also is my sister, but so that so the union is the actors are from both, but you're all part of a gem, and that's why I love it. You can have to deal, talk to them, because we correct them, and we all that gem, because it's all one actress, and the actors, you know.
I didn't separate. Exactly. You didn't separate things into right, like you think.
Stuck in it, like, well, you know, my teacher's a great philosopher, and that's my second goal. But the nicer, it was the way you, what he did, was to be oppressive. He didn't go around saying, and he doesn't get anything. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
He gave it up to you. He gave it up to you. It
was all one for him.
It's a problem with the film, but that's the basis.
For everything. That's the actors of a Kodesh Baruch Hu, right? It brings it back into all, into the oneness. Not like they're what?
Helping someone outside of himself, but they can't stand that it comes on their own. Let's say he has nothing in himself, but other people's needs are very important. That's what we would say. Well, it says, how should I have to come up? Well, you didn't need this, you didn't need that, so how do you feel like somebody else needs it? But the point is, he needed it in a certain way that they should have it. It was his need that they should have it. Because they were bad men.
But he recognizes that need because he feels so much a part of them. No, I hear what you're saying, definitely. It also brought down that David HaMelech called himself a chassid, called himself a chassid in Tehillim, and he said a chassid is really devoted to the welfare of others and to the higher ideals. And in the Gemara in Brachos, it says that David was a chassid because he promoted Shalom Bayis. So it says in there in Brachos that he worked on Shalom Bayis for people. And result was that he was called an Ohev HaKadosh Baruch Hu because of his working on it. And he became a chassid because of his chesed. And he became a Ohev Hashem because he was a chassid. So that's the like the spiritual fruit of Gemilas Chassadim. So I can either stop now, I can go on whatever's most convenient for everybody. I mean, there's still a lot left. We can finish. We can finish next week. And we'll start next week. What I wanted to do is the transition. It's the opposite because as we know the Beit HaMikdash and the times before, not today, as we learned in the beginning, is that first came Birkas HaTorah and then came the Brachos HaShachar. So the Beit HaMikdash follows that pattern, but it's an interesting relationship between, and there two are the 15 steps as we said in the beginning up to Ezra's Yisrael, from Ezra's Hanashim, has 15 steps. These are the 15 brachos that go up, and there's a relationship between Birkas HaTorah and the 15 steps, and the whole generations from Avravino down to the Beit HaMikdash, Shmuel, and the destruction. There's like a lot of relationships there before we even get into the brachos, and that's hopefully to relate to. And since it's really right before Tisha B'Av, the idea of the Beit HaMikdash and what it means in a deeper way. So we could finish this and then do that if people have to go. Okay? Thank you. So we were going through the different types of Ela dream to Ein Lehem, or to Adam Ochel Prisayhem Ba'olam Hazeh. That can came as well as Olam Haba. This is the idea that a person can have the fruit of their principle in this world, but their principle is remaining for them. The principle of their reward for their mitzvot is waiting in Olam Haba. But we can get a few little fruits. We went through what it means, different tastes of that, or different benefits that we get in this world even though they're really spiritual benefits that we get. And you really can't get a full spiritual benefit in this world because we're a group, we're a body, and it's a physical world. But there's like kind of a hint of spirituality, of rukhniyat, that Hashem is giving us to either keep us going, or to give us more benefit or opportunity, or to help us grow in terms of our personality, in terms of our essence, which then helps our neshama grow. Okay. So we went through up to the Shema Sefer Midrash Shacharis Ba'arvi. So Rav Shlomo says on this that it means learning in a Sefer Midrash. It doesn't mean just going to shul. And the reason is that the idea is that someone sees you going, a man, going from the Beit Knesset to the shul to Beit Medrash. Okay, now sometimes it's in the same place. But the idea really is for the people in the world to see that incredible, I've just finished my tefillah, and now I'm going immediately to Beit Medrash. This incredible drizus and love of Torah. This running to go and learn Torah. And early. Immediately. And then again in the evening, you know, mincha, maariv, whatever, going from one to the other. And the idea is learning, it's said that it's learning in public as opposed to only learning in private. But some people prefer to learn in private, but what he's saying here is that there's a big reward for learning in public because this encourages other people to learn. It helps them want to learn. It creates like a, the Beit Medrash is full and alive. And also people in the street see people constantly going into a Beit Medrash. And they think, oh, what's in there? Or what, you know, what is this? Or, wow, they run to this place. Or what are they doing there? And the idea of Shacharis Ba'arvi is that it's two times a day, that there's a chance in the morning for people to see, and then there's another chance for other people to see in the evening, this activity on the street moving into the Beit Medrash. So it's interesting, I read a story once about a father who would come home late at night, very tired, after work, and he would want to go to learn, but he was very tired at night, and he was sleepy most of the shiur. The same shiur was given again in the morning by the same rav, and in the morning he was wide awake, ready. It was before davening, and he went to the rav and he asked him. He said, or one of his rabbanim, and he said, "What should I do? Should I go to shiur at night or in the morning?" And he said, "The difference is that at night." He told him the difference. He said, "But one of the other differences is that my boys who are young, they see me in the evening when I come home, and they see that I run off to go to the shiur. In the morning, they're not awake yet when I go to the shiur in the morning because it's before davening."